Support for this public radio podcast comes from Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, shrm.org.
Oscars, Schmoscars.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli. Just as they were rolling out the red carpet in Hollywood last night, some big rumblings around another entertainment screen. Video game publisher Electronic Arts made an unsolicited $2 billion bid for rival Take-Two Interactive. Take-Two's response? Take a hike. Marketplace's Dan Gretsch has details.
Take-Two is releasing Grand Theft Auto 4 on April 29th. It's projected to sell 10 million copies and would likely be the biggest video game release of the year. During a conference call this morning, Electronic Arts CEO John Riccitiello said his company wants to cut a deal as soon as possible.
We believe we can take games from Take-Two and sell more of them.
Take-Two says it wants to wait on merger talks until after Grand Theft Auto is released. Of course, that could increase the value of the company, whose boardroom has been in turmoil recently. Ben Schachter's a gaming analyst at UBS. He says video games are becoming more expensive to produce, and that leads to consolidation.
A game like Grand Theft Auto can cost, you know, tens of millions of dollars to develop, and if you're a small publisher, you don't have the resources to get that done on a consistent basis.
Another big gaming merger set to close this year. Activision and Vivendi's game business will become Activision Blizzard. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Further proof that the future's in plastic, credit card giant Visa said this morning its upcoming IPO is expected to raise more than $17 billion when it goes public. That would make it the largest IPO in U.S. history. Visa processes more than 44 billion transactions a year, 20 billion more than MasterCard. And on Wall Street this morning, the Dow is down 6 to 12,374. The Nasdaq's down 2 to 2301. And the S&P is down 3 to 1350. In Japan today, the Nikkei rose 3%. A new poll finds 55% of the economists surveyed don't believe the U.S. will fall into a full-blown recession. On the other hand, 45% of them do. From Washington, Jeremy Hobson reports.
The federal funds rate, which banks charge each other for overnight loans, has been nearly cut in half since September. The National Association for Business Economics predicts it will drop another 0.5% this year as the economy continues to slow.
In the near term, it may be somewhat tough sledding.
That's economist Lynn Reeser of Bank of America. She and her colleagues foresee the rate rebounding to 3.5% in 2009.
I think it's extremely optimistic, and I hope that they're right.
Professor Stephen Cicchetti of Brandeis' International Business School says the forecast relies on the idea that the economy will rebound quickly, as it has in past recessions.
Policymakers are not losing sleep over the rosy scenario. They're losing sleep over the catastrophe that they see as being not a likely outcome, but a possible outcome.
Cicchetti says inflation worries may send interest rates up higher and faster than the association predicts. In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Now, charities are worried about how recession will affect their bottom line. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
The Committee Encouraging Corporate Philanthropy has invited CEOs of financial services companies to a forum on corporate giving today. Executive Director Charlie Moore says some have already told him they'll cut back on philanthropy, but Moore says most CEOs realize that's bad for a company's image.
You know, if Goldman Sachs is going to keep up, it's not likely that Merrill Lynch is going to say, oh, well, we're going to stop.
But the Center on Philanthropy reports corporate giving falls by 5% during recessions. Researcher Melissa Brown says new donors will be scarce as companies hunker down.
The focus will be on preventing layoffs as long as possible, that sort of thing.
Brown also says companies will be less likely to donate cash. Instead, they'll offer free products or services. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
A battle of the video game titans is unfolding that shows just how powerful this slice of the entertainment industry is. Electronic Arts made an unsolicited bid for rival Take-Two Interactive this weekend. $2 billion, 50% over Take-Two's Friday close. Take-Two told Electronic Arts to take a hike. Virgin Atlantic took to the skies this weekend, powered by biofuel. Virgin head Richard Branson says the jumbo jet flight from London to the Netherlands was to prove there's an option that can produce less carbon dioxide than normal jet fuel. But some climate change experts say the test flight was nothing more than a publicity stunt. You are listening to the Marketplace Morning Report this Monday, February 25th on marketplace.org. New York hasn't escaped the mortgage crisis unscathed. Parts of the city are experiencing rates of default and foreclosure as high as any in the country. The government's not helping much, so the Catholic Church is stepping in. Parishes are adding Sunday school lessons in mortgage finance to their weekly masses. Jill Barshay reports.
The Catholic Diocese of Brooklyn started holding its new housing crisis workshops yesterday. Monsignor Alfred Lopinto is the vicar for human services.
Between Brooklyn and Queens, we're anticipating in excess of 10,000 possible foreclosures before this year is out. We were very concerned about that because of the impact it has not only on the homeowner, but on the homeowner's family and on the community at large.
Priests won't deliver this sermon. Lopinto's brought in outside housing experts. They'll teach parishioners how to modify their mortgages before the foreclosure notices arrive.
The idea is to use the churches and making it as convenient as possible by having them right during the Sunday services.
That followed complaints by church officials that their neighborhoods could revert to the urban blight of the 1980s. In New York, I'm Jill Barshay from Marketplace.
Next week, the Morning Report will be live from Cairo, Egypt. Marketplace's Scott Jagow will be your host. We'll be looking at economic issues in the Mideast on this and other Marketplace programs. What better way to get in the mood with a little music? This weekend in Brooklyn, artists from around the world will begin a month-long festival of Arab music. It's a subject most Americans probably know very little about, but some determined Arab musicians are hoping to change that. Caitlin Carroll has more.
I played this track by Turbo Tabla, or Kareem Nagy as he's known offstage, for a few shoppers at the mall to get their reaction.
That's kind of relaxing. I like that instrumental stuff a lot.
It's a different kind of melody.
Too many bloop, 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 bloop.
I wouldn't buy it. I like rock and roll.
So I asked ethnomusicology student Ben Harbert, what's the problem?
I mean, the hard thing is, I think, with Arab music and people opening up their ears is to so many Westerners, it sounds out of tune. I mean, it's like listening to bebop for the first time. You wonder, like, where's the melody?
Small but growing audiences do hear it and do get it. The challenge now is crossing into the mainstream. Kareem Nagy wants to break into that mainstream crowd by mixing modern electronic music with traditional Arab percussion. He makes from $400 to $1,000 per performance, enough to make it full-time. But to build his audience, he needs to be more than just a musician.
It's not enough for me to just know how to play my instrument anymore. I need to know about marketing and financing and product presentations so that I don't just, you know, disappear into the bargain bin.
Bashar Barazi is one of a handful of Arab music distributors in the U.S. He's also launching a dance tour this spring called A Dream of Arabia. He hopes it will do for Arab music what Riverdance did for Irish folk.
Strong arms, please. Strong arms. Keep them up, lifted, up.
In the back room of a Middle Eastern dress shop, Barazi coaches a dancer through her steps. He says this tour will help raise the curtain on the Arab music market.
What helps in that is that I'm an American, so, you know, I almost am a translator. I think I have this position of I'm translating from one culture to the next, and I am sitting right in the middle, and happily so.
The American audience will decide if that middle is mainstream enough. In Los Angeles, I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
Existing home sales figures for January will be released in a few hours. Don't expect them to be rosy. Now, commercial real estate is suffering too. Bonds called commercial mortgage-backed securities allowed easy money to flow into the world of office buildings, but at the start of the year, they'd all but dried up. I asked Alan Sloan of Fortune magazine to start the conversation by explaining just what commercial mortgage-backed securities are.
It's a security backed by a mortgage on a commercial property being something like an office building, an apartment building, or a shopping center.
And they were hot, red hot last year. Why? Because everybody was so hot for commercial property the way they were for residential?
Right. It's the same thing. Back a few years ago, the idea was any residential mortgage-backed security you bought couldn't help but be good because house prices always went up and mortgages always got paid. That fantasy, of course, is gone. That fantasy until really fairly recently still prevailed in the world of commercial real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And reality has now set in. And from being way too liberal with transactions, now we have the reaction where nobody wants to do anything.
So, Alan, one storied example of this is real estate titan Harry Macklow. He bought $7 billion worth of New York City real estate last year, commercial property. Now he's having a hard time refinancing his loans.
He bought at the absolute top of the market. He's a very big property holder in Manhattan who has now run into this problem, like he can't pay the bills, his loans are coming due, and
mm-hmm.
he is the poster boy for commercial mortgage excess.
Now, but I would imagine most people listening to this aren't so disturbed by a wealthy man sort of over-borrowing. You know, you can feel more empathy for a guy who might have bought a house that was more than he could handle. What are the cascading effects, though, of the Macklow situations to the rest of us?
It's all indirect. It's not like a mortgage where you see people on the street, you know, who've lost their houses, where it's easy to understand. Here, heaven only knows who owns these securities. I mean, your pension fund might own them. Nobody knows where these securities are or really what many of them are worth. I mean, this doesn't mean that the shopping center near you will close. It may have a new owner, but it's part of what they call the unwinding of all the borrowed money syndrome, where so much money was borrowed and now the lenders are freaking out, and that indirectly affects all of us.
In Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli. Enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
A lot of people are interested in saving energy and saving money, even if it makes them feel a little weird.
When you flick the switch, there'd be a delay and a blink, 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 and you might have looked like a Martian underneath because of the light quality.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Compact fluorescence next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.